Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
All right, back here on the Investor Coaching Show, Paul Winkler. So, we're talking a little bit about indexing. The idea behind an index fund is you're generally tracking an area of the market. I often talk about how, you know, when you try to figure out which stocks are going to do better than others, it's a huge waste of time. And I see these videos out there. You only need three funds as an investor. And a lot of times they're just talking about three index funds. And typically the information's horrible. Because the index funds that they're recommending, I've seen these videos out there on YouTube. You only need three funds, four funds, or whatever. They have all of these problems that I'm talking about, but they go even deeper than I typically talk about. So I'm going to walk through that a little bit. But it's simple. And, you know, there is a bias that we have as humans. And that bias is that we want things to be super, super simple. And what we often do is we oversimplify to the point where the information ends up being fairly useless or very low quality. Because we want to make it so simple that we don't have to think much. But, you know, can you imagine? There's a case for that. You go to a doctor and say, hey, give me an idea what you're going to do. If they told you every detail of the surgery that they were going to provide on you, your mind would probably blow up. And the same thing can be the case for investing. But yeah, I think you deserve to know a little bit more. And sometimes I've taught workshops like this and people go, oh my goodness, Paul. And I go, but isn't it nice that we know this stuff? And they're like, yes. But I want you to have an appreciation for the complexity in investing. When you really start to get into the details and dig into the details, because it can make a big difference. So let's say we take the S&P 500. You know, generally you'll hear me say it that way, the 500 biggest companies in the US. Now, why is it that I just say generally and I don't say it is the 500 biggest companies? Well, because you could have a company like Tesla, you know, and when they were the 60th largest company in the world, they weren't in the S&P 500. Or in the U.S., excuse me, they were 60th largest company in the U.S. They weren't in the S&P 500. You're going, well, wait a minute, how could that be? Well, the reason was because they didn't have four quarters of positive net income, and that is one of the criteria to be included in the S&P 500. It's one of the requirements is that you have to have that. And what happened is that there was this period of time between when S&P said they were going to add Tesla versus when it was actually added that the stock went from 130 to 230. That's a pretty big jump. It's a pretty big jump in value, right? And what happened is that it then became like the sixth largest company. You know, so it made a big jump just because it was going to be added to the S&P 500. Now, is that unusual? Well, on average, I saw this one statistic that said it took 33 months after a company fell into the top 500 of companies for it to be actually added to the S&P. And that was over the last year. That was 12 stocks. 33 months. And if you look at who decides what's in the S&P 500, it's really a secret committee that makes that decision. So we don't really, you know, necessarily know. You know, like Google didn't get added because it had done so well. And that was just a different story right there. It didn't get added because it had done so well as a stock. And you go, well, why didn't it get added? Because you got humans determining which stocks are going to be in this index. And as a human, you look at that and go, well, wait a minute. This thing is like skyrocketing. Do we want to add it to the index because the horse is already out of the barn? And they said, well, maybe not. We'll wait for it to do what? We'll wait for it to drop. Well, there's only one problem. It didn't drop. You know, so as an investor, you would have missed out on most of Google's run if you were following the S&P 500, which is the reason I bring that up is because you often hear me say, you watch these videos, and what are they telling you to do? Invest in these big cap index funds. Why? Because they're well known. You know, the vast majority of money invested is invested in these huge companies, which is where I would expect the least return long run. It's a problem. Now, if you look at small value stocks, let's just use that as another area of the market. Where would I expect the greatest amount of return historically? Small and value. Why? They're small companies. They've got a lot of room for growth, potential for growth. And then value, those are companies that have lower prices compared to book value and earnings possibly, or, you know. But, you know, you look at how do we determine if something is small value or not? And you look at them and go, well, what metrics do I use to determine whether it is small value? And if you look at Russell is an index provider. They use three metrics. If you look at MSCI, they use eight. Well, which one? Personally, I'm going to tell you fewer metrics than that. And the reason being, and I'm not going to get into this, but in my book, I do Confident Investing. I get into a little bit talking about how the denominator needs to be more stable. But there's a reason. I'm not going to get into that right now. I'm really tempted, but I'm out. But if you look at like when it's reconstituted, like I was talking about earlier, you know, an index fund buys a bunch of stocks that it says, okay, these are small value stocks, let's say. And then as time goes on, they decide to change which stocks are in there because maybe they drift out and they're no longer small or value stocks anymore. And I wanted, by George, I wanted to have a small value index. So what I do as the index manager is I reconstitute it. I go, okay, I'm going to change this and make sure that I'm really back to small value again because some of these companies aren't small in value anymore. Well, if you look at, I think it was last year, the companies that were in the Russell 2000 value index, 1 year later, 20% of them of those stocks are now growth companies. We got 20% of your portfolio that's not even small in value anymore. That's a lot. And if you look at that and say, is that extreme? No, it's not. You know, that style drift is the norm in index funds. You look at the overlap between the Russell 1000, that's typically the, in general, the 1,000 biggest companies, and the Russell 2000, which is the next 2,000 below that. How much overlap is there? Well, in the best case scenario, in the past year, 15%. But it ranged all the way to 35% of the portfolio because of this style drift. Well, you look at that and go, well, what rule of investing is that breaking? And this is why this is important. You know, you always hear me say that there are rules of investing that we generally know are true, and maybe we ought to be following what we generally believe to be true. But when I invest in indexes like this, and you have that much overlap, you're breaking the rule of investing, which is diversification. Because if you have that 35% of the portfolio, those particular stocks go down in value, you don't just have one fund that goes down, you have both of those funds that go down due to that performance. You know, so that's an issue. And you go, well, they do reconstitute it. You know, they do that once a year. Yeah, great. Can you imagine if you just, you know, went up to your boss, let's say, and says, hey, boss, I'm only going to go to work 1 day a week. Or I'm going to only go to, even worse, 1 day a year. That's what they're doing with the index funds. They're reconstituting it 1 day a year. Now, maybe if your boss only paid you for that 1 day, they might save money. But how much money do they lose because you're not doing anything the other 364 days of the year? Now, you look at that and go, well, you know, it's there are costs to this laziness. And I've only just scratched the surface. I'm going to talk a little bit more about it. And talk a little bit, because people ask me all the time, oh, you just, these guys, and I've heard financial advisors say that. Well, Winkler, those guys just index portfolios. No. This is why I tell people, no, this is not my, this is not my modus operandi, because there are problems with indexing, but there are a lot of problems with active stock picking and market timing, and that is typically what you find in the rest of the industry. So I'm going to continue on this. I want to continue to educate, because I believe the more that you understand this stuff, the less you get taken advantage of. But here's the thing. If, let's say you're a client of ours, and you're going, wow, I had no idea you guys were doing all this stuff. It's kind of cool to know that.
Hey guys, if you want specific advice for your unique situation, schedule a free 15-minute phone chat with one of our trusted advisors by going to paulwinkler.com/call. We don't sell any products, and our advisors don't make any commissions, so this isn't a sales call. We have a coaching process that helps you understand investing and relax about money. Don't put blind trust in anyone with your financial assets. We want to partner with you in the process so you know what you're doing and why. We manage assets on a fee-only basis, which means that when you do well, we do well, which aligns our interests with yours from the start. We also bring you into the financial planning process that gives you a clear plan so you can find the freedom to pursue your purpose. All our advisors are degreed planners, too, with years of experience. So schedule a free 15-minute phone call with an advisor by going to paulwinkler.com/call.
All right, I'm back here on the Investor Coaching Show. I'm Paul Winkler. Okay, so what I'm talking about right now, a lot of times people think that when I talk about investing, I'm just talking about, you know, market efficiency. So you stock pick and market time. No, you buy and hang on to things. You don't do a lot of trading. Now, it doesn't mean that nothing's going on when you're managing a portfolio. There's a lot going on, but it's just not picking stocks based on which companies you think are going to do better than others. Because what do we know about that? We know that there's somebody on the other side of the trade that says, hey, you're getting rid of that stock? I'll take it. Or when you're wanting to buy something, there's somebody on the other side of the trade that says, I'll take that, because they think it's going to go up. Now, when you're indexed, you're just buying and hanging on to things. And that may sound good. It may sound like it's inexpensive, but it can be expensive in other ways. You know, you can end up with risks that you didn't even know you had. And, you know, if you look at the NASDAQ, for example, you know, this is my pet peeve. If you listen to the media, they talk about what the Dow is doing today, the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. And then generally, you're hearing what large U.S. stocks did three times. S&P 500, large stocks, Dow, large stocks, NASDAQ, in general, large stocks. Now, why do I say that? Well, NASDAQ is a trading platform, but if you look at the concentration in the NASDAQ, it is going to be more of the bigger companies, and it can get really extreme. If you look at, you know, at one point, the Magnificent Seven, everybody's talking about these seven companies, NVIDIA and Microsoft and so on, and these companies that were really, really doing great, very tech-oriented companies, right? And AI was going to be very, very beneficial. Now they've decided that they're down to the Fab Four. That's their new name for them. But anyway, you know, the Magnificent Seven, at one point recently, 55% of the NASDAQ 100, 55% were these seven companies. I mean, just think about that. Seven companies, 55%. So when something goes wrong with those companies and you have that index, and all of a sudden it comes down, that's 55% of your portfolio. That's a problem. Now, if you look at what happened when they decided that they were going to change it, the funds that track that index had to have 23% turnover. That's a lot of buying and selling. And what you're doing when you're turning it over, that's how many of the stocks have changed in the portfolio. So you got to sell these companies and you got to buy these companies and you have trading costs. Now, is that part of your expense ratio, your management fee? Answer is no. In fact, the cost to do that was double the expense ratio of the fund, of the ETF that actually tracks that area of the market. Now, the question may be for you, for those of you that are listening, you may ask this. Why, Paul, does this stuff not get fixed? Why is it that nobody comes in and says, man, we need to fix this problem. This is a problem. And I would submit that the reason is that most of you are asleep at the wheel. You're not paying attention to any of this stuff. I mean, you look at it and go, man, this ought to be, everybody ought to just at least have enough interest to pay attention to some of this stuff. Well, no, I don't need to pay attention. My financial advisor is. No, I'm telling you, I got a buddy of mine. He's been training financial advisors for over 30 years. Over 30 years. I had to think about that for a second. And one of the things that I had a conversation with him one time, because I was actually signed up to go through a doctoral program, financial doctoral program. And they closed down the program. The long and short it was, they didn't have enough people to teach the program. And I was really disappointed. And he goes, Paul, he said, why do you want to do that? And I said, well, you know, typically, unless you have doctor in front of your name, a lot of times people don't pay much attention and teaching isn't necessarily something that you get to do. And he goes, I'll never forget it. He goes, forget it, Paul. I've been trying to do that for 30 years. They'll never listen. They'll never learn. And he was just, you know, don't bother. It doesn't mean, you know, and I'm just like, well, that's kind of frustrating. He goes, I'm telling you, it is beating your head against the wall. Often to get financial advisors to do it because they are subject to the same biases that investors are. You know, they're human and it is so hard to get them to follow the academic research. And, you know, he's one of these guys, he's kind of like me. I mean, you know, get us to change our beliefs on things. I've been doing this radio show, those of you, and there are a lot of people out there that have been listening to the show for the 22 years that I've been doing this. Because I get people to say, I ask them, how long have you been listening? And they're like, almost 20 years. Yeah. There are people that kind of get that I have not changed this message in 22 years. You won't shake me. And it's because I am absolutely convinced and I understand this and I get it. And I think it is critical. So why doesn't the industry change it? Number one, a lot of these biases are hardwired into people's brains. But another is there's no incentive. You know, when it gets down to it, what is the incentive when the public and the investing world are ignoring the academic research because it's easier to sell based on past performance? It's easier to sell the idea that we have a hot hand and we know which stocks are going to be best. It's easier to sell that we can look at the tea leaves, we can look at the academic or the evidence, excuse me, not academic, the evidence out there, and we can look at, let's say, you know, what's going on in the economy or what's going on politically, and we can tell you where markets are going to go because, hey, you know, If something's bad happening over here in the economy, that means the stock market's going to go down. And those two things, it seems to make sense. But then I come out there and I tell you that, do you know that a lot of the biggest upturns in the stock market are during recessions? And people sit there and go, what? That doesn't make sense. That doesn't seem reasonable. But it's true. You know, a lot of market downturns occur during expansions. That doesn't seem real. So what happens is it's a lot easier to sell people on what seems to make sense to them. It's a lot easier to get them to invest in a mutual fund that just recently had good past performance because it seems likely that it will continue to have past performance. Why? Because we think it is because of skill that it had great returns. We don't ever consider that it might have been luck. Or it might have had nothing to do with the investment manager at all, but just a movement in that area of the market or some technological breakthrough that happened to affect that area of the market. Another thing is this. Well, I'm going to save this till after the break because this may come as a surprise to you. Whose interest is served? Really, really important. And when we look at professional managers, And how often they beat the index is pretty bad. 15-year SPIVA data, S-P-I-V-A. They have this data on how often professionals do better over 15 years. They have it like over 5, 10, 15 years. How often they do better. For large companies, it's like 93% of the time the index does better than the professional manager for large companies. And it's like 97% for small companies. It's different for different areas of the market and different based on different time periods as well. So you look at that and you say, well, if the professional managers can't tell you which stocks are better than others, then just buy the index fund. And you think, well, that's cheap because it's really inexpensive to manage the index fund. But part of the reason it's so inexpensive to manage is there's nothing really going on. So you end up with expenses that you're not thinking about. Like when an index has securities lending that they do, where they lend securities to people trying to short the market, hoping that they can actually beat the market by buying or selling something and then rebuying it at a lower price. That is what is called shorting. You can lend those securities. And what a lot of the index funds do is they will actually make money doing that and keep the money for themselves. Well, I kind of like the idea of the fund giving that money back to the investor. I think that's what's right. But, you know, what I think is right doesn't necessarily tell you what an index fund manager is going to do. Now, the other thing that they'll do is they will be subject to somebody else coming in and front running them. When they've got to sell a stock and get rid of it, somebody will sell it in advance of them selling it. Or when they've got to buy a stock, they'll buy it before the index fund buys it. So they'll front run them and take advantage of the index manager. And I think a lot of you'd probably go, man, I don't really like the idea of being taken advantage of. And that's what's happening with index funds. And the other thing that you'll find is that there are a lot of different indexes out there. I talked about it earlier, 3 million. I mean, which index do I track? And then you'll have indexes that are investing in small stocks, small U.S. stocks, but they can have huge differences in returns in the same exact area of the market. And then you'll have the funds that aren't necessarily tracking that area of the market because there's been drift out of that area. Small companies become medium-sized companies. Well, I wasn't trying to track medium-sized companies with my small index. That's another thing that you run into. Now, the other thing that you want to understand is that the index provider is not a fiduciary. They don't have to keep your best interest first. It's not part of their job description. Their job description is to put together an index that somebody will maybe license and track using an index fund or an ETF. That's what they want. They want you tracking their index. So that's why you have more S&P 500 index funds than any other market that I can think of. I can't think of any other index that is tracked more often than the S&P 500. Why? Huge name recognition. Now, because it's a well-known name, does that make it a good thing to do? Well, no. Your mom probably said to you, you know, just because everybody else is out there jumping off a bridge, does it make sense for you to go jump off a bridge? No, it doesn't. But herding bias is a real thing. We do tend to follow other people. We're like hardwired to follow other people, whether it's right or wrong. And we think there's safety in numbers, but there's not. This is why I think it is so critical that you become an educated investor. PaulWinkler.com. We educate, but you know, you don't have to know everything that we know. But I think it's critical you know some things because it's hard to take advantage of you when you're educated. Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors. And confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one.
Advisory services offered through Paul Winkler, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor. The opinions voiced and information provided in this material are for general informational purposes only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what investments are appropriate for you, please consult with a financial advisor. Paul Winkler, Inc. does not provide tax or legal advice. Please consult your tax or legal advisor regarding your particular situation.